Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Hi, this is Bill Farmer. You're listening to the Neverland Podcast.
Another world, another time in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream. You could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's Mightiest Heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm gonna have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast. The podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith and trust.
Well, if it isn't the Star Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, Neverlanders. Sprinkle some of that pixie dust around, grab your happiest thoughts, and fly away with us to Planet Comic-Con, Kansas City. We've had a wonderful time, a great weekend. We had Adrian Ropp, wonderful artist, has done so many different things. We had a panel with him, you, me, and Eric and Adrian, because you're here with us in spirit. You're getting to hear this. So it was a great time. You're going to get to hear that panel. But before I play that audio, I want to say that we've got so much more from Planet Comic-Con coming up here in the future. I had a wonderful conversation with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, WWE Hall of Famer, class of 2011. That was fantastic. Dream come true. I got to have conversations with Rob Paulsen, though I was not able to record it. But he's got some interesting things that he told me about the upcoming Ninja Turtles series. Basically, give it a try. I mean, I'm kind of skeptical of it myself, but I'm going to give it a fair shot. And Rob Paulsen did say that, you know what, if you don't end up liking it, then you just don't watch it. And eventually the show will go away if nobody likes it. But if there are some people that enjoy it, we let them enjoy it. So that was pretty cool. It was nice getting to talk to him. I got to talk to a little bit with Jess Harnell. I'm hoping he might come on the show. Trying to also make contact with Jim Cummings. I wasn't able to get completely in contact with him. But I did have a good time at the event. I recorded a lot of great panels. You'll be hearing them all in future episodes. What you normally would hear in today's episode would be a review for the film Black Panther, but because I was at this convention all weekend, I didn't have an opportunity to see it. Hopefully, maybe by next week, I will have seen it, and maybe Eric will have gotten a chance to see it. and we'll be able to discuss that next week. I am still working on having a great panel discussion about the difference between the Walt era and the modern era of Disney animation and filmmaking. I'm still working on that, but we've been very busy with all these other events. That should hopefully be coming up very, very soon, along with great panels from, Alan Tudyk, Palm, and I don't know how to say her last name, but she played Mantis in Guardians of the Galaxy and the upcoming Avengers Infinity War. I sat in with Matthew Lewis, who played Neville Longbottom in the Harry Potter films. So many great recordings that I have to share with you in the coming weeks, months, however long it takes for me to be able to share all this great audio. I've got some great video to share that I will be posting up to our YouTube channel. I'm probably sharing some of the audio of those videos here with you, but some of this you really are going to want to see, including a fantastic program by Walking and Rolling, or Walkin' and Rollin', take the G's out and add an apostrophe. These are the people, they are making costumes for kids that are in wheelchairs. They basically make a costume out of the wheelchair that's very easy to take on and off, and so the kid can get out of the chair if they need to use the restroom or something like that. It was a fantastic program. I was trying not to cry behind my camera. It was so touching. They did a whole thing where they presented a costume to a little boy that was there that was a special order. It was a fantastic event. I've got so much to be able to share with you, but today we're going to concentrate. I'm going to share with you a panel we had with Adrian Ropp, former Disney artist. He does Chim Chum, his own series, which is now in a comic book form. He's currently drawing, and I believe also still writing, for Rocky and Bullwinkle, also a comic book. He has done past work for Pink Panther and Underdog, all through AmericanMythologies.net. Make sure you're picking up some of their stuff and go to your local comic shop. If you don't see any of these books, tell them you would buy that if they would order them, and you would love to be able to read some Chim Chum, right? So one thing I do want to note here that you're going to notice, we do have some fun talking about this. The Planet Comic Con organizers, I don't think they realized we were a Disney show, and they put our panel on Friday, which is usually lightly attended compared to Saturday, but it was on during the exact same time as Jim Cummings' panel was in the main hall. And I think most of the Disney fans had gone over there to Jim Cummings, and unfortunately, we played to a rather empty room. It was kind of unfortunate, and poor Adrian, I think he took it a little like it was somehow his fault or something. But I think it was just bad timing. But you're going to love the conversation with Adrian Ropp. We've had some audio from him before that Eric had recorded at a previous convention. You may have heard him on Disney Indiana. He was lots of fun. He's done so many cool things. You're really going to enjoy this. But I've blathered on long enough. Let's just get right down to it. And we'll pick up right after some the audio recording that I got there. It was on some equipment that I had checked out, but they hooked it up to the mixer for me. But they had a little trouble with getting the volumes straight there at the beginning, so I've done what I could. And I edited out my previous introduction there because there was a lot of clipping. So we're going to pick right up where I'm pointing over to my right, where, well, you'll just have to figure out who's sitting right to my right, won't you? And of course, sitting over here to my right is the lovely and talented Lost Boy Eric.
I do what I can.
Of course, and you do it so well.
Well, that goes without saying.
Goes without saying. And over to your right, I'm going to let you introduce him because you've known him since second grade.
Sixth grade. And don't make us look too old here.
Oh, well, heck, you're not that much older than me. We're all old together.
Yeah.
But we never grow up because this is Neverland.
No, never. Never do.
Never grow up.
No, but over here to my right is my very good friend and former guest of Neverland Podcast, Adrian Ropp.
Hi, everybody. Please take your seats. We only have 50 minutes in this room, and yeah, we have a lot to get through. So,
yeah, standing. I do love a standing ovation. Oh, but my goodness! So
now, why have we invited Adrian to join us today? Adrian is a former Disney artist. He's worked with Lucasfilm. He's worked with Archie Comics, and he's actually got some work out right now of his very own, Chim Chum and the Portly Samurai, is a comic book just released last month, and he's here joining us in Kansas City to talk a bit about what he's done in life, where he's going, what's happening, and hopefully, we just want to let him know how much we appreciate him.
Yeah.
Well, I'm happy to be here, and As cold as it is outside, I'm really enjoying the warm reception I've been receiving here at this panel today.
Well, yay, good. Because it is, I was kind of wanting to see y'all's face when you stepped out in this 30-degree weather. After last night when you came in, it was probably still in the 50s, wasn't it?
Oh, no.
No.
It had already dropped?
No. Maybe the negative 50s.
Because it was 50, 60 degrees yesterday, but because this is Missouri, a cold front comes through and drops us down to 30 and below.
The wind chill was present.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So welcome to Cold Air.
Thanks.
But we'll get started. We'll get the biography of Adrian Ropp. I feel like the Jeopardy music should be starting. So what got you interested in artwork? Was it because you loved cartoons and decided you wanted to draw some of those characters you saw on TV?
Well, yeah. When I was 6 years old, I went to the theater with my grandparents and saw The Jungle Book. And I remember thinking, I don't know how you do this for a living, but I want to. This is what I want to do. I love the characters. It was so colorful. The animation was so vibrant. And, you know, I'd been a Disney fan my whole young life at that point. But that was the moment where I thought, this is what I was meant to do on this earth, is to make things like this. So, yeah, that's kind of where I got my very first start. I recently learned that I think Brad Bird might have been influenced by the same film. And I'm not sure if anything ever came of Brad Bird. I haven't heard what's happened since then, but I think we've probably had a very similar career.
I don't know, something about Iron Giants and Incredible People
never,
or something.
Yeah, I haven't followed his career very closely.
Yeah, I think he did something for The Simpsons once.
Maybe. Could be,
yeah,
could
I
be.
Don't know.
So Rides, anyway, directs, I don't know. So I just took arts, you know, I just took art classes in high school, and I'm mostly self-taught and just kind of worked my way up the ladder and networked with people and got people to kind of vouch for me and train me. And eventually I got into the animation industry.
So what was the first character you drew since The Jungle Book inspired you? Were you trying to draw Baloo?
Yeah, I used to try to draw Disney characters, but I loved doing stories so much. I actually had my own comic strip character named Freddy the Frog that I've been drawing since he was like a stick figure. But yeah, I used to draw comics and photocopy them and sell them at school for probably less than it cost me to photocopy them.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I just love telling stories. And I think the reason I love The Jungle Book so much is that the characters were so fun. Like, I wanted to go on a journey with them because I really liked the characters. And so it wasn't until years later that I realized I didn't want to be an animator. I wanted to be a storyboard artist, because the storyboard artist got to tell the story and frankly got to tell the animators what they had to do. Got to boss everybody around.
Now, how does being an animator translate into working in video games?
So both of them are jobs in which your whole family will tell you that you're not actually doing the work for a living, and they don't take your career seriously, like when they're all doctors and nurses and stuff. But for a storyboard artist, it's very similar, because I do the cut scenes and the story development for video games. And other than you want to tell the story a different way so that the gamer can be the main character that makes the choices versus a canned experience in a film where you're watching the main character make the choices. It's just a different way of storytelling, but the tools are pretty much the same for me. I started when it was 2D animation back long, long ago, and when 3D took over, it didn't really affect anything I did at all. It's just a different instruments to tell the same stories. I didn't have to start learning how to storyboard any differently or anything like that. So story is one of those disciplines in the entertainment industry that translates really well across the different types of medium.
So what was the first thing you got to work on?
I was in relative obscurity working on small projects for a privately owned company in Utah. And the first film I worked on was called Princess and the Pea, which is about a $10 million animated, hand-drawn animated musical, and it had a really like limited theatrical run, like 10 theaters. But that was my first experience, and I worked with the head of layout from the Don Bluth Studios, Mark Swan, who's my first boss, and he'd started his own studio, so I got to work there. And one of the great things about that project was all of his buddies that used to work at Bluth would come do little sequences or pieces of Princess and the Pea, and so they'd come work at the studio, and I'd get to meet them and pick their brain about things. And Rick Estrada was one of the guys that showed up there, and he did comics for DC for years and years, Sergeant Rock, and he did some Wonder Woman covers, and I got to learn how to do comics from him. He also worked on Hanna-Barbera shows like Wacky Races as a storyboard artist, so I got to learn a ton from him. Another guy, Jared Beckstrand, who's an animator at Disney. He did Pacha in Emperor's New Groove, Esmeralda in Hunchback, Jane in Tarzan. He's mostly did like the women, the heroine types characters. He came in and worked there a lot, so I got to learn from him. And the other big one for me is Bob Simmons, who is an effects artist, and he actually was the effects lead on Swan Princess and Cats Don't Dance. So I got to see a lot of cool stuff that way as well.
Yeah. You learn a lot of that Disney style even when you work, you know, through Don Bluth and everything. You get, there's a very similar type of thing.
Well, definitely have their own signature to it, but it's all the things were figured out by the old Disney crew, the Nine Old Men especially. Yeah, not just them, but you know, they get all the credit and they were great, but there was hundreds of people that developed that style and everybody got to benefit from it.
Yeah.
One of the things that makes me the most sad about animation right now is that those skills are getting lost.
Yeah. They're,
some of those disciplines translate to 3D and some of them you don't get to learn because nobody's teaching them anymore because nobody's doing hand-drawn animation at a feature level.
Yeah.
Now, while working on Princess and the Pea, what did you learn about voice work?
Voice work, well, let's see, Princess and the Pea. So it was set in Europe, so we cast all English talent for it. So, but we mostly did the voice acting over the phone, you know, patched it into the sound studio, and we just direct them and give them feedback. Otherwise, we'd have to travel back and forth a lot. That was my first experience doing voice directing, though, because that tends to be a part of the story person's job. But, you know, you learn things like, don't be too subtle with the voice acting because it doesn't, when you're doing voice only stuff, it doesn't read very well unless they're a little bigger with their acting. And you also find too that there's people that are meant for voice acting and then there's people that were meant for screen acting and they're not always the same people. A lot of times when you listen to interesting voices in cartoons, those aren't the people that are celebrities, you know?
Right.
And I hate to point out somebody, but like Brad Pitt as Sinbad in the DreamWorks Sinbad movie, kind of dead sounding. Yeah. Like it wasn't great. So you learn how to figure out where good talent can come from. Also, there's three little piglets in the show, and we decided to cast little kids as the voices, and that's tough because first the kids grow up, and also they're really hard to direct. So I know they did that on Bambi with the voice of Bambi was a little kid, but it's really tough to get a good performance because they're usually not actors. You're usually getting the sound of a sincere sounding little kid.
Yeah. You spend a lot of time with them. But, you know, talking with how voice actors usually don't get the credit they deserve, I am liking here lately, it seems, with conventions like this, we are getting a lot more voice actors in and people are starting to recognize them like, hey, these are the people who made everything you've loved since you were a child and are still making it. And so I love the fact that people are starting to acknowledge voice acting and how tough it can be and how tough it is to get into. So
isn't it interesting that you can have someone like Jim Cummings, for example? I'll just pull his name out of the air for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, for no reason at all, we're going to talk about Jim Cummings.
Yeah, yeah. Who knows? I wonder where he is this weekend.
Gee, I don't know. He might be here. I don't know. Didn't he have a panel about now?
Yeah. Anyway, he'll probably show up here, I'm sure. But it's interesting to me to see people get excited about him because he's the voice of Darkwing Duck and walk by the guy that designed and wrote the show and have no idea who that person is. I mean, some people do, but people relate to that voice so much that it becomes the dominant part of the character. Very interesting.
And well-deserved, though. Really
yes.
well-deserved.
Oh, his work is amazing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, again, I hope he hears that someday.
Yeah,
I hope somebody finally recognizes him and like goes to panels and things.
Right. All right. So, like the big elephant in the room, though, you were doing story for Disney Infinity.
I did. I worked for Disney for about a decade. Yeah. By the time I left the company, I was the head of the story department. So I got to work on Cars characters, you know, Lightning and Mater. I worked with the Mater character for four different games. So I got to work with Larry the Cable Guy a lot.
Oh, fun.
And, you know, did Cars, a Toy Story, One of my favorite things is I'm a very nervous person, and so I got to write all of Rex's lines for Toy Story, and everybody thought I did the best job, and it was just because I wrote them like it was me. So, poor Rex. I worked on Monsters University playset, which is pretty cool. Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy, and then Star Wars, all the Star Wars playsets, the prequel trilogy, the original trilogy, and Force Awakens.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you're approaching something like, of course, Marvel's going to have a big fan base, but the Star Wars are like this beloved, almost iconic. When you're going to try to translate that into a game, and yet in that very fun toy box style, how do you approach that?
Boy, you know, it's hard because I think there's a you want it to be entertaining, and you don't want it to be the same as the film. The problem we always had when we made a game that was based on a film is if you tell the film story, the film did it better. It's right. Always going to be the case. And so you look for places to either tell the story from a different angle, or, for example, in the Monsters U playset that we did for Infinity, we actually set it in the... There's a montage moment where you don't actually see all the stuff that they're going through, so we set our game there. So that's what's happening between Acts 2 and 3. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like a deleted scene version. There was a lot of things that we did the sequel to or you know, things like that. But I'm very precious about Star Wars. When they were talking at work, like, who should be in charge of making sure that the Star Wars stuff gets done right? There's a lot of people that wanted to do it. And I didn't want to do it because I knew that was going to mean I had to read the script for Force Awakens a year and a half in advance.
Oh,
and
wow.
I relish the experience of going to the theater for those movies so much. I'm like, I don't want it to be ruined for me.
Yeah.
But then something else worse occurred in my mind, which was, but someone else isn't going to do as good a job as I am with this content. So I just have to be a martyr and, you know, I'll work with Lucasfilm. But it was an absolute pleasure, and you know, I got to work with Daisy Ridley on her very first voice acting call. So she'd never done voice acting before our project, and yeah, it was funny to watch her like figure out like, oh, you have to do this different. You know, this isn't like stage acting or screen acting. It's like we do like three takes of a line, or there's all these effort sounds you have to do that normally an actor wouldn't have to do. And so that was interesting. And then John Boyega actually played Disney Infinity, and he didn't know that's what he was recording that day. And then when I told him what we were doing, he was kind of geeking out the whole time. Man, I can't believe I'm doing effort sounds for Disney Infinity. And so that was pretty awesome. But
thank you.
I hear an applause through the wall. I assume that's Jim Cummings.
Well, probably talking about us. That's our applause.
Oh, is it? Okay.
That's our applause.
I thought maybe it was Jim Cummings talking about us. But, you know, I worked with the guys at the story team at Lucasfilm quite directly, and I consider some of them really good friends to this day, actually. And do you guys know who the Holocron Keeper is?
Leland Shi.
Yeah. So when they came out to visit us the first time when we started doing Star Wars stuff, he introduced himself, and I said, wait, you're the Holocron Keeper, aren't you? And that's the guy, for anybody in the audience that doesn't know, Holocron Keeper is the guy that pretty much is the lore guardian that tracks everything Star Wars related. He's the living Wikipedia or Wookipedia of Star Wars. And I knew who that guy was, and I don't think normal people do, so... I think that started our friendship right away. but they were always great to work with, and I really had a great regard for them.
You know, working on The Force Awakens like that, what was the one thing that, you know, you wanted to be able to share with people but knew that you couldn't?
That's a tough question. I think most people would say that Han died. I didn't want to tell anybody that.
Spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Spoiler warning.
I'm sure there's two people in the world that haven't seen that movie yet. Yeah. The thing that I really wished I could have told everybody was how cool Rey was.
Yeah.
Like when the toys started coming out, the Force Friday, the September before the movie came out, the only thing I was looking for was Rey toys, because I knew, I'm like, she's going to be the thing in Star Wars. This is a big deal. And I was on board from the get-go with that character. So what I wished I could tell everybody is, like, you're not going to believe how awesome this Rey character is. It's amazing. Who cares about Han and Chewie and Luke? And I mean, we all care about him, but,
of course,
but
we do.
It's Rey's story. It's Rey's story through and through. And I think she carries it really nicely. So, but that's probably the biggest thing. Also, just the unabashed love story it was to the original film, and all the nods that it gives, and, you know, the first time you see the Falcon again, I still get chills watching that, because it's just such a great moment for me. But yeah.
And one thing I really kind of love that was a bit of a fan service from when doing A New Hope is actually having there on Tatooine the little Beggar's Canyon run, and even having the little Eye of the Needle that it talks about, like in the audio drama of Threading the Needle. I noticed it was in there.
Yeah.
I loved it. And that was like my goal, like whether I was, you know, just goofing around or what, it's like I had to fly through that little hole. Every time I went through, it's like I must thread the needle.
And by the way, aren't those audio dramas great? I love the Brian
so
Daly. Those are great.
So great. You get all those extra details, all those deleted things. Which,
yeah. Oh, the New Hope ones, like, there's probably like three other movies before the movie even starts.
Was there some deleted stuff from The Force Awakens that you were able to put into the game? It's been a while since I've played it.
I'm going to say no.
Okay. Yeah, probably not. Is there any little extra things you wish you could put in?
So we couldn't. Maz Kanata, we couldn't. They were still finalizing her design when we had to be done. Mm. And so we had to change the story slightly. So it was her robot helper when you went to her planet, Takadana. Maz Kanata on Takadana, by the way, is the worst line of dialogue you can be asked to write. but so we had a robot character that replaced her that was actually in the, we actually like went through and found photo ref and found the character that could be that character. So when we usually did things like that, we tried to make it canon or, you know, canon-ish. So it was reasonable for everybody to agree that this robot worked with Maz and probably would walk people around to different parts of her layer. So that was a bummer to lose Maz, because that she's such a fun character.
Yeah,
and they didn't get to do much with her in Last Jedi either. So
well, between all of the toy boxes that you worked on, all of the play sets, all of the you know, even naming things, what was your favorite line that you got to write between any of the games?
Oh, that's easy. I actually have a really good one. So Russie Taylor, who's the voice of Minnie Mouse. And I'll try to say this story without crying, but I've never successfully told this story without it, even with no audience. I mean, even with a small audience.
With a packed room.
With an average-sized audience. You guys are great, by the way. Thank you for coming. I was waving to my favorite audience members. Russie Taylor, who's the voice of Minnie Mouse. We did Minnie Mouse in Infinity.
Yes.
And I am infatuated with her. I think she's amazing. She's so sweet and nice, and I've worked with her a few times, but her husband, Wayne Allwine, used to be the voice of Mickey Mouse, and they were sweethearts. They loved each other so much, and they'd always record together. And when she often showed up to recording sessions before him, and when he walked in, she'd say, "There's my handsome prince." That's how she always greeted him when she came in. So we were able to write lines for Mickey and Minnie to say to each other in Infinity, and so Wayne had just died maybe 6 months earlier, and so I wrote one of her lines to be, "There's my handsome prince," for her to say to Mickey to put in the game. Yeah, so that was a special thing, and Russie was so gracious to actually say the line, and there's always going to be a piece of me telling Russie and Wayne how much I love their work together and how much I appreciated him and her love for him. That's going to be in that game forever, and I felt very honored to be able to add that to the legacy of Disney.
See, now I'm going to have to go when I next play it. I'm going to have to put Mickey and Minnie in there together just to get them to
just
say it.
Well, you just saw me just now. Just don't make me be around, because it chokes me up every time.
That is an awesome way to tribute, though, to Wayne. That was
the best way I could think of to say something about it, you know.
That is fantastic.
You know, what do you think was your best day working on Disney Infinity?
Oh, boy. You know, it was probably my first trip to Pixar. The first trip to Pixar I took was when we were making Cars 2. And that was just awesome. That was, I mean, it's just awesome. Got to eat in the Pixar atrium at their cafe. And they have a Pixar store there and everything. And man, did I buy a lot of stuff at that Pixar store. Little did I know, I'd go there. I probably went there at least a couple dozen times over the years. And by the end, I was like, I can't buy any more of this stuff. I have most of it home already. But I bought a lot of Hawaiian shirts. A lot. But that was probably my best day. That was the kind of pinch me, I'm dreaming day. And, you know, I got to work not always directly, but sometimes they'd show up with Pete Docter and Andrew Stanton. And I met Lasseter twice. Other than just, hey, how's it going? There wasn't much of a conversation there. But just being in that culture is just such a cool thing. Yeah, it was a big moment. And if I were going to give a second answer to that, it would be the first day I got to go to Lucasfilm.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
So which is your favorite bit from Pixar and getting to work on between Cars and Monsters University?
You know what? The Cars 2 video game, that movie doesn't get a lot of love, but that video game was awesome, and it was so much fun to work on. And I got to work with the rest of the story team on coming up with a really clever hook on this training facility that Finn and Holly Schiff will have, where they can teach people to become special agents. So the whole game got to be a shoot 'em up with, like,
cool
Fillmore and you know, Sarge with machine guns strapped to the sides of him and stuff. We totally made it make sense. It was kind of really cool action adventure game. So that was probably my favorite product. My favorite sequence was I got to do an alternate version of the fight scene between Kylo Ren and Rey at the end of this Force Awakens playset, because they hadn't filmed it yet.
Yeah.
So they told me to go ahead and storyboard something, and they'd just correct me on where I'd gone wrong with it, and they didn't give me any corrections. In fact, to this day, I erroneously claim that they stole my idea for their fight scene, because mine was done first. So please don't let anybody from Lucasfilm hear that part. Just kidding.
You were there first. You licked it. It's yours.
That's right. They're like, oh, yeah, Adrian figured this out. This guy's got the chops. I get it.
You know, going back to writing for characters, uh-huh. You know, that's got to be quite the thing, because, you know, we all have a relationship with different Disney characters. We know how they sound. We know how they should react. How did that inform your writing?
So there was projects where we actually knew things, like Mickey and Minnie, I knew how they should sound. Yeah. And Disney has a character voices department that keeps everything in line with the brand vision, but generally those tended to be easier writing tasks for me. There was a lot of times where we had, like, we were making the Toy Story 3 video game, Whoopi Goldberg's character, it's the octopus, what was its name?
Stretch,
is it Stretch? Anyway, we had no idea. Like, when it's a new character and they don't let you see a screening or read a script even, you don't know the cadence or the character or anything, so they end up being, your first draft ends up being a very caricatured versions of things that actor has done before. The Yondu character, because I did the, you know, the Guardians playset, and I was working, Brian Michael Bendis, who was a writer for Marvel, now a writer for DC, he worked as an advisor on the playset on story stuff, and then we got to the Yondu character, none of us had seen the film or screening or anything, and we kept writing him, and I'd read the Guardians comics, so I was writing Yondu like he is in the comics, which is a very noble warrior,
yeah,
who's above reproach, which is not the Yondu in the film. And so I kept sending him drafts, and Marvel would say, like, no, you're not getting it right, try this, and they'd give some direction, but it wasn't great direction. And then one day they said, well, you know, the guy playing it is Michael Rooker, Merle from Walking Dead. And everybody in my department except for me hadn't seen The Walking Dead. So I said, oh, it's Merle? And they're like, yeah, and he just sounds like Merle. And so, okay. So I just wrote it like it was a Merle from The Walking Dead, and I sent it in. They're like, no, you got it. You understand it now. But like, Yondu's not Merle. Okay. So, but I mean, who can argue with how cool Yondu is in those movies, though? It was a great choice for them, but we had a really tough time with that one. The other one that was really tough was Vanellope from Wreck-It Ralph, because there's sort of that baby voice sound that Sarah Silverman's putting on.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand that at all. So that took a while. It happens, you know. It's always easier if you're the one creating the character. If you're working on a product for another person's creation, it's hard to know what's going to be on the screen.
Yeah, especially like the difference between Baymax in the comics versus Baymax, the Disney version, trying
exactly.
to get that right.
Yeah.
It's like a completely different character. So speaking of comics, let's just dive into your work in comics. So what's the first comic you ever got to work on?
So I did some writing and layout stuff for Archie Comics, which I've been an Archie fan for, since I was about six as well, yeah. And that was pretty awesome. I have a friend that's a penciler at Archie and helped me get some work there. And so I still occasionally do some things for the classic style Archie stuff. But
classics are better.
But now when I go to panels and I tell people that I've worked for Archie, all the girls that are obsessed with Riverdale think I'm cool. So it's pretty nice. Like I went to a panel last year, and nobody that went to the panel, they knew it was an Archie panel, but they didn't know that I'd worked with Archie. And so when they announced me in the room, a couple of girls started crying, and I felt so stressed, because I'm like, this panel is not going to live up to what you're hoping for. I'm sorry. I know Jughead's hot to you, but so I did that first, and then that kind of led to some work doing Pink Panther. There's a reboot of the Pink Panther series. And that,
I have some of that.
So I got to do a story for the Free Comic Book Day issue, Pink Panther, with the Ant and the Yardvark characters, which are my favorite Pink Panther characters. And then I got to actually draw the next year the Underdog Free Comic Book Day issue. And I did this Three Stooges Halloween Fest Free Comic Book Day issue. And I've just done bits and pieces of them, all those comics. And currently, my two big things are Rocky and Bullwinkle. I'm starting work as the penciler on that series with the next issue. And my own creator-owned comic, Chim Chum and the Portly Samurai, which my publisher decided to give me a chance. And that issue one just came out. And you can find any of that stuff either in your local comic shop, which you should be carrying it, and you need to tell them that they need to, or you can go to AmericanMythology.net and you can buy stuff there too.
So, yes, where does the character Chim Chum come from? This little fox. He's this adorable little guy.
Chim Chum and the Portly Samurai is very personal to me, because Chim Chum, the little fox, is basically my cat, Isabella. And she was kind of a jerk, but she also loved me, and she was a great cat. She's the best little sidekick I ever had in my life. And the Portly Samurai is me. I'm a big fat guy. There's one panel where you actually see, just like me, the samurai is actually bald. He's wearing a wig the whole time. But the samurai is me, and how angry I'd get at my cat doing shenanigans, and the fox is my cat. So it started as a R2, I know. a lot of the earlier strips started out more like a single panel Dennis the Menace thing, but now I'm doing longer adventures with him, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, and I can vouch for Bella being a jerk.
Yes, you met her a few times. She was only a jerk to you.
I know.
I mean, no, wait. She was only not a jerk to me and my wife, I guess would be the better way to say that.
But Chim Chum is, while the comic book just came out, Chim Chum is not a new creation.
No, I have a web comic that's been going for about 8 years on chimchum.com. And I'm actually rebranding it right now and redoing a lot of the older strips, because it's appearing in a couple of newspapers now.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's a great time to actually check out the comic if you haven't seen it yet. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good, just fun humor. I think it's still one of my favorite ones is Chim Chim and the Samurai are about to have a snowball fight, and Chim Chim's got this giant boulder of a snowball.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It's just pure, just innocent fun. I love that.
That's the thing. Like, I'm really inspired on that comic strip by Dennis the Menace. Like, I feel like Dennis doesn't mean to be a bad kid, but he's just a kid, and sometimes that makes adults really uncomfortable.
Well, better Dennis the Menace than The Far Side.
Yeah, I think these characters wouldn't work with Far Side humor. I don't think.
So with the new comic series, is this we're going to see a little bit more of a, because Chim Chum apparently being the sidekick, so I get the sidekick. So I've, which there's another real one that cracked me up. That's not what a sidekick means. And you have the portly samurai rubbing
his
side.
Oh yeah, because he kicked him in the side. Yeah,
yeah, I love that dad humor kind of thing, I guess. But so do we get to see a little bit more of Chim Chum like trying to train to become a little fox samurai? Or
it's unclear from issue one what Chim Chum's role is, other than he hangs around with this guy and occasionally is helpful. But hidden sort of secretly in the issue are many Easter eggs revealing a bigger story. There's a 4-issue story arc on this first set that I have planned, and this one may seem like sort of a surface level adventure, but there's actually a lot of things that it's set up for a very epic sort of journey. Yeah, so I can't reveal what the future holds for that little fox, but there's something cooking.
Ooh.
So now, when obviously you've talked about Dennis the Menace being an inspiration, but you know, what artists do you look to when you are looking for inspiration?
Oh, so Carl Barks, famous Uncle Scrooge artist, and to a somewhat lesser extent, not because I don't like him, just because he kind of took the torch. Don Rosa, who's here today and maybe having a panel somewhere at the same time. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, Michael Rooker is supposed to be going on about now. Speaking of him.
Jeff Smith, who did Bone, the comic book Bone.
Wow.
He's one of my very best influences. Sergio Aragonés on Gru. And then for comic strips, Bill Watterson, but I think every comic strip artist would say that. And George Crenshaw, who had a lesser known comic strip called Belvedere about a dog who annoys his owners all the time, which is probably plagiarized by Chim Chum. I'm not sure. But not George George Henshaw. So those are probably my big ones. Yeah.
So I just thought of this out of a wild blue yonder. So if you were going to come up with a good video game of Chim Chum and the Portly Samurai, what would you do? Would you be able to play as Chim Chum or the Samurai or both?
It would be a Tetris-style game in which you move Chim Chum from side to side, catching pieces of sushi in his mouth. I think that's pretty much all you could do with him, because he just eats and eats and eats. He's a bottomless pit.
Well, I would have thought that he was the one tossing things Tetris style.
No. So a running gag is becoming that the portly samurai is overweight, but he's never the one that gets the food. It's always Chim Chum, who seems to just be able to pack it away. So, yeah. I've already in my mind cast, like, if there's a cartoon series, Rob Paulsen would be the voice of the portly samurai. And Chim Chum would be the voiced by nobody, because I guess we could get Jim Cummings, but he wouldn't have any lines.
Yeah. Well, you get Frank Welker does the great animal noises.
Yeah, but I don't think Chim Chum foxes kind of make a sound, but I don't know.
What does the fox say?
That's a different podcast.
Or something, I don't know.
Available on iTunes.
I think they can bark in some fashion.
Yeah, they have a little bark, they do, but they're usually pretty quiet.
Yeah, usually fairly quiet.
Yeah.
Because they're sneaky, you know, apparently. Uh-oh, there's that Zootopia stereotype.
So you're here at Planet Comic Con, of course, to join us here at this panel, but you're also selling your own artwork here. Can you tell us a little bit about that and your style?
Sure. So I started doing a lot of artwork for conventions. The first thing I realized was younger girls really liked characters like Wonder Woman. And they could only find really sexy looking Wonder Woman art. And so I started catering more to, if I had a kid, what kind of cool stuff would I want to let them decorate their room with? And so while I have no qualm with everybody else's art, I really like to focus on things that will inspire people to let their kids express themselves and, you know, speak to their fandoms in a way that's sort of family friendly and really accessible. What I love more than anything is when somebody comes to my table and they have a personal connection with something I've created. That's what I'm always looking for. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I always enjoy seeing at these conventions are the people who come up and, you know, there's a lot of Disney work, there's some superhero work, but one of the things that always seems to grab everybody are, oh, look, it's Batty Coda from Fern Gully.
Yeah.
Or
I'll do a drawing of a more obscure character that I loved, and you always think, oh, nobody's going to even know who this is, and there's always somebody that's amazed and happy that you've drawn something like that. Yeah.
You know, what? Can you tell us about your Thumbelina picture?
Oh. Is there a specific thing you're thinking of?
When you were selling your original art for that.
Oh, that's right. So I drew Thumbelina from Don Bluth's Thumbelina movie. I just drew a watercolor drawing of it. And I had it forever. And everybody said, like, why did you pick that character? Why did you waste time drawing that character? That's so obscure. And I said, you mark my words, someday somebody will come buy this and they're going to love it to death. They're going to be looking for a Thumbelina drawing and they're going to love this one and they're going to buy it and I'm going to take a picture with them and I'm just going to rub it in everybody's face. Well, I took a break from my booth one time and my wife was watching my booth for me and lo and behold, somebody came up and bought the Thumbelina picture. But of course, I wasn't there. So she took a picture of the girl to show me later. But yeah, it's somebody loves everything.
Yeah.
Black Cauldron is my least favorite Disney movie. There is somebody in this world for which that is their favorite movie.
Yeah, and I would probably still buy some of the art. The design of that movie is brilliant.
Yeah.
And the books are fantastic. I've been hearing Disney's now got the rights to try to try again.
Yeah, like they're doing a live action one.
Yes, I'm so excited. They're great books. And the style, which we need to have the Peraza's back on the show sometime, because Patty Peraza did some of the effects on that one. Great animators.
Cool.
So she's had some artwork of Toon Fest. Very, very cool. So, yes, we do love some Black Cauldron. So,
awesome.
Anything, yeah, because you even have, you've done some Swan Princess probably then as well, haven't you?
I did a couple things, yeah. I did the Puffin from Swan Princess, and somebody bought that.
Oh, yes. Exactly. I know I've seen that movie a couple times. That's a good one. Stuff that's the obscure stuff, like Quest for Camelot is another great one.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, draw that obscure stuff.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Just go for it.
I do.
I love it.
If anything, I need to draw less obscure stuff because I need people to react more often to it. But it's just too much fun. I love it.
Yeah. So you got to love all the different type of things like that, though.
Yeah, I do.
So what is your favorite piece of your own?
Boy, that's a tough one. I did a chibi version of Beauty and the Beast from the Something There sequence. That's probably up there. And also, back in the old days, I did one I really love of Sawyer and Danny from Cats Don't Dance, dancing. And that's probably one of my favorite pieces, too. Yeah. But honestly, comic book work, the first issue of Chim Chum is... I'm very proud of because I did everything for that, with the exception of some of the lettering. And I did a story called Scared Pink for Pink Panther's Halloween issue. And that was my first long format story. And I'm pretty proud of that one as well.
Wasn't there a tribute to your dad in that one?
No, I know what you're thinking of. I actually inked a story that had a fire engine as part of the story. And so I got some of those pages back and I gave one to my dad for his retirement because he was a firefighter.
So coming up in the future, is there any place that we can look for what you're doing?
So the best place to go is chimchum.com, which has links to all my social media. And you can find all the great books that American Mythology publishes that they let me work on. And also, Archie, once in a while you'll see a Archie digest with my cover jokes. But mostly chimchum.com, if you go there, that's the best way to get updates. I also have a Patreon there that you can get a postcard of the month deal, and you can actually pledge just a little more and get sketches. But that's where I'm kind of focused right now is the comic book stuff and just meeting people at conventions and sort of interacting with fans.
Okay. All right, so any advice for any budding artists out there?
Yes. Don't hold your panel at the same time as Jim Cummings. You will be heartbroken. If you are starting off in the industry and that's your first experience with interacting with your fans, it might destroy your career. Me, I have no soul left, so it's not a big deal. But No, draw. Watch movies, study them, interact with people that are in the industry, be very gracious and respectful of their time, but ask them questions. How can I get better? Are you willing to look at my stuff? Can I do anything for you? Or, you know, just things that might help them have a sense that you're in it for the long haul and that you're really committed to doing well. But if you want to be a writer, read. I think you know, obviously you have to write too, but read and just draw. Like you know, Glenn Keane, one of the Disney animators, always used to say, you know, you have 100,000 bad drawings, so you better get started. So the idea is you have 100,000 bad drawings before you have a good one. So I just perseverance and practice, and don't give up on yourself, and don't second guess yourself. Just hang in there, because that's what it takes. It really does. You could spend a lot of years wondering if you've got what it takes, but as long as you just keep plugging away, you'll probably have a pretty good outcome from it eventually. Yeah.
I see we've run out of time here.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for spending this time with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks
again,
for having me.
We can reach out to you at chimchum.com. That's chimchum.com. Yep.
com. Mm-hmm. While we're spelling.
And, you know, if we want to find the comic book, you know, check out your local comic shops. Go to AmericanMythology.net. Mm-hmm. And then again, you know, if you haven't tried playing Disney Infinity yet, go check it out.
Yeah, you can't really play online anymore, but it's still a lot of fun to play with.
Exactly. You may be able to go to a Toys R Us and get a crystal Perry the Platypus for 99 cents. So
yeah.
This is a perfect time.
You know, and I believe we do have some links over there to the Art of Adrian Ropp at NeverlandPodcast.com.
Awesome.
We do have our Friends of the Show page. You can find him. Make sure you use that link. If you can't remember how to spell Chim Chum, at least that'll get you, because you have there's Chim Chum, and is there a different page of just an Adrian Ropp page?
That's the place to go.
That's
the central
location. So that's probably linking it over to Chim Chum is probably what I've got set up. I just know that I've got that image.
Might be a Facebook page that's different, but
the
website.
Facebook
website will be the place to go.
And awesome. Do you have Instagram or any other places where
I do. I'm on the social medias. So if you go to the website, it will give you the links.
All right. And make sure you visit us at booth 1338.
Thanks again, guys.
Thanks. Thank you, Adrian.
And you can stop the recording now.
So everybody, as you exit, please try to be mindful of the crowd and exit slowly and be safe.
Yeah, don't push. You'll all be able to get up there.
Thank you.
Michael Rooker is still there.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
Become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPCast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/neverlandpodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Yay!
Save big money now on new siding from LP SmartSide at Menards.
update, and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.